Our third speaker today, I think I'm striking fear in the hearts of the speakers, wondering what I'm going to say about them at the end. This is Professor William Fox. He directs the Center for Business and Economic Research at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where he holds an endowed chair in economics. He has served as a consultant on finance, taxation, and economic development in several states: Louisiana, Massachusetts, Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina. He's worked on tax commission in states including Arizona, Hawaii, Kentucky, Minnesota, Ohio, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He has over 100 major publications. In a 20-year time period, he raised over $15 million for his research. He's given 100 talks and consulted with 26 countries around the world. He's received a number of awards. One of the most prestigious is the Stephen Gold Award. This is from the American Association of Public Policy Analysis and Management, the National Tax Association, and the National Conference of State Legislators. Now, as this record reveals, we really carefully screen these speakers for the quality of their research and their nonpartisan reputation before we bring them in, and the soundness of their judgment. On a personal note, I asked Bill what he does in his free time. He said he's a movie buff and he's a big sports fan. So he assured me that he cheered for Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl and the Packers in the NFC Championship game. In fact, last year, for his fantasy football team, his quarterback was none other than Aaron Rodgers. Here in Wisconsin, that's pretty darn good judgment, wouldn't you say? So his topic today is designing revenue policy for Wisconsin's future. Thanks a lot, Bill, for coming.
Thank you, Karen. This year I had to settle for Tom Brady, and I wasn't nearly as happy about that. Thanks for having me in Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to be here. It's always fun to see my old friend Andy Rachofsky and be on the program with Dave Merriman, and I enjoyed Steve's comments very much. So again, thank you for letting me be here. Last time I was here was about 18 months ago. It was in August. I thought it was always like that in Madison. Yeah. The interesting part is I'm flying from Madison to Chicago to Knoxville, and the place where I'm going to have trouble getting today is Knoxville, where it's snowing. So you should enjoy this nice weather where it's not snowing right now. Well, what I'm going to do is talk about three things. First of all, I'm going to talk about how to think about taxation. Secondly, I'm going to talk about what states are doing in terms of, I'm hesitant to use the word reform. I'd rather use the word change their tax system. Some of them are reforms, some of them aren't. And then thirdly, as I'm talking about what states around the country are doing, I'm going to sort of editorialize on whether or not it's good policy or not. So those three things. The first thing I want to do then is begin to talk about, well, what would I think about if I were designing a tax system? And so just four points, and you know, there's nothing unique about these four. I think most analysts would give you the same set. The first thing is I'd worry about is, well, I mean, we're taxing mostly to get revenue, so I'd worry about how much money we're going to collect. And, you know, this is not my decision. I never go into a state or a country and say, this is how much money you should raise. That's not my decision. It's the General Assembly's and the people's decision. But whatever size government you want, you need to fund it. That's what I'm saying. But you shouldn't think about it just in terms of, am I raising enough money in 2011 or 2012? You need to put together a system where the revenues grow at the right pace to fund services over time. So what you can do is set your tax structure and leave it alone, because a lot of the problems with taxation, particularly from the business side, come from tax changes. They want certainty in the tax system, and to get them certainty, you have to be able to get the structure in place and let it grow. And then you need to worry about stability of the system. Now, hey, there aren't any taxes out there that help you deal in a serious way with a recession. I mean, every state, with the exception of North Dakota, got creamed in this recession, and North Dakota happened to have some very unique things about it. You know, there weren't any things you could really do, but you can keep it from being worse. Dave mentioned, for example, the sales tax on food. I mean, what's the most stable part of consumption? It's food. Take the sales tax off food, you make it a less stable structure. Take clothing out of the base, you make it less stable. So there's some things you can do to make it better or worse. You also can look at then things like rainy day funds, as Dave mentioned. By the way, that takes a huge rainy day fund. We've done some work on that prior to this recession, and we estimated you might need 40% of the budget or something like that, because recessions are never one-year problems. You started feeling this in 2008 or 2009. You're feeling it in 10, in 11, in 12. This isn't a one-year issue you're dealing with. You're dealing with a 4 or 5 year issue. You're trying to get one-time money, a rainy day fund, to deal with a 4 or 5 year problem. It takes a huge one. So have one, get a big one, but recognize you'll have to do some other things as well. So first thing is to worry about revenues. Second thing is to worry about fairness. And again, I'm not here to tell you what's fair. That's in the eye of the beholder and for the state of Wisconsin to decide. But as I think about fairness, the first thing I want to be sure that I'm considering is who is really paying the taxes. Think about this. The economist lingo for this is incidence. Think about who is really paying the tax. And from there, there's two dimensions that at least I like to think about. One is vertical equity. How do I treat two people, with different abilities to pay? That could be regressive, it could be progressive, it could be proportional, whatever you think is appropriate. But then I also want to worry about horizontal equity. How am I going to treat two people who have the exact same capacity to pay? And as I narrow down the base, in order to deal with vertical equity, I say I'm not going to tax that because of vertical equity. I almost always harm horizontal equity. I make it worse. I end up treating two taxpayers with the same ability to pay very differently. So I'd encourage you to think about broad tax bases. Notice I didn't say high revenues. I said I'd encourage you to think about broad bases on what you're going to tax. You're more likely to get fairness. And further, I don't think you should worry about whether or not each individual tax is fair. The question is, to me at least, is the sales tax fair? Is Wisconsin taxes fair? Is the whole package fair is the issue that I'd be addressing. Third issue I'd worry about is administration and compliance costs, and I'd worry a lot about that. I speak a lot to revenue commissioners and that kind of thing around the country, and I always say to them, every single thing you guys do is a waste. And they appreciate that enormously. But my point is, I value them as people and as what they do. You know, I say that to emphasize my point. Every dollar we spend on administration is a dollar that's not available for public schools, or a dollar that can't be given back to the taxpayer. Every dollar we spend on compliance is a dollar that business can't put to its bottom line. So you should worry very much about administration and compliance. It must be done well, but it must be done at low cost. And so getting that balance there is key. And then finally, I want to design a tax system that has the least distorting effects on behavior. I think people ought to be making decisions on what they buy. I don't think the tax structure should do that. People should be making decisions on how much they work. The tax structure shouldn't be doing that. The businesses should be deciding where they want to operate and where it's most cost-effective for them to operate, not the tax structure. And so design tax system with those kinds of issues to consider. Those four: revenues, fairness, administration compliance, and how is the tax likely to alter good behavior. So as I'm now going into what are states doing, I'm going to have these four issues in mind. I don't have time to address each one of the taxes in great detail, but I will be thinking about these four issues, and it'll be implicit in everything that I say. Well, here's Wisconsin's tax system. You know it better than I do. You all raise a relatively large share of your tax dollar from the individual income tax, relatively small from the sales tax by comparison with the norm around the country. But there are wide differences in how states choose to generate tax revenues. This chart strikes fear in the hearts of legislators and governors and others as well, showing that taxes have been falling dramatically during this recession. This goes through 2009 because it's based on the census annual data. If I add in 2010, you continued to see decline in tax revenues, though not quite as bad as 2009. And so clearly this is a horrible time from a budgeting perspective. But, you know, I don't think about taxes in terms of how are they just going to fund 2011. And so while I'm worried about this, when I think about tax policy, it's not just how do I get out of a big budget gap. It's what's the best thing to do in the longer term for tax policy in Wisconsin. I'll note here that we're beginning to see revenue growth. 42 of the 48 states that reported to the Census Bureau reported revenue growth in the third quarter of 2010, calendar 2010, and so we're now seeing things beginning to grow again. Wisconsin seems to be doing pretty well in that regard. But as everyone in this room knows, it will be 2 or 3 years before revenues get back just to the levels they were at before, and maybe another year or two before they get back to the same share of the economy that they were at before the recession began. And so the troubles are far from over, as you heard from Dave Merriman. Okay, so let's begin to talk about what other states are doing. And here's five things that I see states around the country doing in terms of tax changes and reforms. I'm going to talk in more detail about the first three and show you some more slides. The first thing states have been doing up until 2009 is cutting their individual income tax rates. Second thing states are doing is messing around in lots of ways with their sales tax. This consistent pattern of sales tax rate increases that's been occurring, and I'll show you why that's taking place here in a moment. There are lots of different things happening to focus on taxing remote sales more effectively. There are some discussions about taxing more services, and I'll emphasize more discussions on that. There are lots of changes, including in Wisconsin, on business tax reform. And then, you know, there have been 100 state, there's only 50 states, right? 100 state cigarette tax increases in the last decade that has seen the rate, on average now go up to about $1.45, and you all participated roundly in that. I got the chance to estimate the revenue implications for Tennessee of our increase, and we missed it really badly. I'll be blunt about that. I looked at all the academic research on this, and what we have found is that the decline in taxed cigarettes in Tennessee as a result of our increase was much more dramatic than we would have anticipated. And there was a academic article 2 years ago where a guy went through and kind of studied this stuff. This was after, unfortunately, I had to do my estimates. And he did this study and said, what we really find is there's not this dramatic reduction in consumption of cigarettes. What happens is once you get the tax to a certain point, you give people an incentive to shop elsewhere. Once they shop elsewhere, they find the cheapest place to buy them, whether it's the Indian reservation, online, whatever. And so smoking doesn't go down so much, but taxed cigarettes in states go down. And the studies on the amount of bootlegging going on around the country are getting quite significant. Do I have water here someplace? Thank you. And then the final thing is property tax caps, and this has become a pretty common thing around the U.S. Thank you, sorry. And that's something I just don't have time to deal with. So I'm going to talk about the first three in a bit more detail with you, what's happening to individual income taxes, what's happening to sales taxes, and business tax reform. Here's a chart showing you that the tax rates for a bunch of states and how Wisconsin stacks up there. If I counted right, you have the 11th highest income tax rate in the U.S., lower than some states like California and New York and if I remember right, Minnesota, and higher than Illinois and Indiana. And so just kind of somewhat in the middle of the states around you. But what's been happening, if you take a longer-term look, is this. And those states that are blue or red are states that decreased their individual income tax rate between 1985 and 2007. And it was a dramatic reduction in rates. We went from a situation in which there were 15 states with rates of at least 10% to where 2007 there were zero states. Every state had reduced its rate at least below 10%. Wisconsin was one, if I remember right, went from 10 to 6.75%. There were a lot of reasons around this, trying to encourage work effort, trying to encourage savings. And I think a really important reason is income tax revenues grow really, really fast. Sales tax revenues don't. And so what states have done is actually, because the revenues were growing so fast in many cases, they've reduced the rate to keep the income tax from getting too large from a revenue collection perspective. Now, we've done some analysis in a study that just came out in an academic journal last month to see whether or not income taxes do, in fact, move people around. We could not find any evidence, and we beat the data every way we could beat it, trust me. We tried everything to find evidence that people moved in response to income tax rates. We couldn't find it. And we started, I mean, it was an academic study, so we were trying to be objective, but we really expected it. We couldn't find it. We took three different measures of income tax structures and tax bases to do this. What we did find was some evidence that income tax base moves in response to the rate, but not that the people moved. In other words, they found ways to plan around the higher tax rates by acting like they had a house in Florida or otherwise planning their tax burden. But we didn't find evidence that the people themselves moved. Over the past year or two, we've begun to see states raise their income tax rates again. This is mostly related to the recession. A couple of states like Oregon and California have gotten their rates back to 10% again. I'm interested to see, do we revert back over the next few years to this downward trend of income tax rates? There is one mistake in this. Louisiana did not raise its tax rate. Let me be really clear. That's just an error. So there were 9 states that raised their income tax rates over the last 2 years in response to this. Now, my general advice on the income tax is pretty simple. Keep the base really broad and set the rates necessary to generate the revenue you need. Keep the rates low, but at the level necessary to generate the revenues. And let me be specific. Some areas that I have concern about has been the tendency of many states to take the income tax off of pension income, Social Security income, and other forms of, let's call it, non-labor income. Because this is what you're doing. You're shifting away from taxing this non-labor income and shifting to taxing work. And that doesn't strike me as good policy. Now, just in case you think maybe I'm this sort of left-leaning wacko making this argument, the American Enterprise Institute had an article last, which is pretty right-leaning in case you didn't know, last August making exactly the same point. That this notion that we're going to sort of keep shifting these taxes to the workers and away from retirees and people earning other forms of non-labor income is likely to be detrimental to the U.S. economy in the longer term. So income tax policy, keep those bases broad in my view. Sales tax, what's going on there? This is sales tax growth around the state. States are beginning to see revenue growth again on the sales tax front. The income tax was much more volatile downward during the recession, but sales taxes are also unstable, particularly because we tax construction materials, we tax automobiles, and that revenue tends to plummet during a recession. But income taxes were affected more. Now we're seeing the sales tax grow as it is in Wisconsin. How does your rate stack up? You have a very low rate sales tax structure. 5% is below the median of 6% around the country. You add in your local rates, which are pretty modest, and you're even further below the national norm. Now, here's what's been happening to rates on sales taxes, though. The red are the number of states that increased their rates. The blue are states that decreased it, and most of those decreases came as a result of, you know, a temporary increase that, then reverts back to a decrease. And you can see this sort of very strong pattern of sales tax rate increases, particularly after recessions. And so if you look back at after the early 80s, there were 30-some states that raised their rate. After the early 90s, 20-some states raised their rates. And more recently, about 15 did after the 2000 recession. So far in this recession, we've had 10 states, much less frequent, and I don't expect a bunch more. So the tendency towards rate increases from the sales tax is much less common. Now, here's sort of the issue, though, that you ought to be worried about, and I illustrate to each state that I talk about. This is your sales tax base as a percentage of the economy. And you can see that, and I've illustrated it from 1979 through 2009, the most recent year for which I have data, and you can see this generally downward trend in the share of the economy that you're taxing with your sales tax. This, by the way, is not out of the norm. I should have put the U.S. average on here because the U.S. average is even more extreme than what's been happening in Wisconsin. This tendency to shrink down what we're taxing. And if you kind of study that chart, what you'll find is that the big decreases in the base happen with every recession, and then it kind of flattens out, and then it goes down again. So there's some cyclical nature to this. Now, why is this happening? Let me give you three reasons why this is happening. The first one is because states are choosing to do it. Now, they may not articulate it that, but every time you exempt something new from the base, you're narrowing it down. And so a smaller and smaller share of the economy is getting taxed. And so as we go to tax holidays, and then states took the sales tax off food, and then they begin to take it off clothing, you're narrowing that base down and taxing a smaller set of things with higher tax rates. Doesn't strike me as in the best interest of state economies. Secondly, what we see happening is a dramatic shift in what people buy, away from goods and towards services. And now, you all aren't too bad, by the way. The Federation of Tax Administrators has a list of 168 services. You tax 76 of them. That's above the norm of the U.S., so you're doing a better job than many states, but you still aren't taxing many of the fast-growing services and the big services. Now, hey, the single biggest service and the single fastest thing we're moving to is healthcare. Now, we're not going to sales tax probably cancer treatments, but there is a lot of healthcare you might wonder, does that belong in the base? But many other things, professional services, construction services, and others are ones you might want to at least think about doing to keep this pattern from taking place. And then the third thing that's causing this long-term pattern is illustrated here. This is based on a study that I and some of my colleagues did for the Streamlined Sales Tax Governing Board. And we went out and said, how much revenues are states losing because of the inability to collect the sales tax on remote transactions? We estimate that Wisconsin in this next year is going to lose about $140 to $150 million from the inability to collect on e-commerce. But there's a bunch of other stuff that does not include catalog sales, which are probably two-thirds as much. And it doesn't include people who live along the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota and who, you know, I'm talking about businesses who send their salesmen into Wisconsin and they act like they don't have taxable presence in Wisconsin. There's a lot of others. So this $140, $150 million I'm talking about is only a small piece of what's going on. Now, this is what's happening to e-commerce. And if you saw the Christmas sales, you saw what I'm talking about here, this 20% gain in e-commerce transactions. And people say, wait, but we need to protect the internet. Now, you maybe can't read the scale on that. What we're talking about here is $3 trillion of e-commerce sales. I mean, the internet doesn't need my help. It's doing just fine. It probably doesn't even need Wisconsin's help. in order to do okay. It's booming. The question is it in the best interest of Milwaukee and Madison to have vendors sitting right there on Main Street remitting this tax and competing with Amazon that is not remitting the tax? Is that in the best interest of your state? That's the way I think about this question. This isn't a revenue question to me, although there's money involved. This is what makes our economy work best. Balance that out. Make sure we're taxing everything evenly. As you all probably know, this is a quote nexus question, and the Supreme Court has ruled on this. But the Supreme Court could reconsider this, and the Streamline Governing Board is beginning to think about going back to the Supreme Court, asking them to reconsider it. Congress can act on this, and you know, it's not only in the best interest of people in Madison and Milwaukee. I would think it's in the best interest of the representatives in Congress of Wisconsin to say, hey, we care about our local economy. We're going to make sure it's not disadvantaged in how this operates. A bunch of states are doing things. You're not a member of the Streamline Governing Board. You might consider that. I was actually just an expert witness for Colorado in a case where they're being sued. They're requiring remote vendors to report on the tax. New York has done some things, these Amazon laws. There's some question about whether what Colorado and New York are doing is the best thing. But certainly requiring remote vendors to collect the tax so we even out the burden is in the best interest of us all. And then finally, let's talk about business taxes. Here, the first point I want to make, and this is taken from a study done by Ernst & Young, is that businesses are paying all kinds of taxes. They pay the property tax. They pay the sales tax on many of their purchases. They pay the unemployment insurance tax. You can even ask the question, why do we need a corporate income tax? That's less than 10% of the taxes paid by business. So businesses are paying lots of taxes, not just the corporate income tax. Keep that in mind. Having said that, let's now turn to the corporate income tax. And corporate income tax revenues are still declining in many states. They're not in my state. We're actually seeing quite good growth. But in the average state, they were still declining through the third quarter of last year. But here's what states were noticing over the long term. And this is a chart I put together. That blue line shows you the corporate tax base around the U.S. as a share of gross domestic product, of the economy. As a share of profits, as a share of corporate profits. And you can see that line was just going down, down, down. And states were saying, wait a minute, what must be happening is tax planning. Firms are planning around our tax structures, and so that's what's going on. Well, that may be part of it, but let me note, if you tax something, it goes away. So if you tax the corporate form of business, but you don't tax the unincorporated form of business, you get less corporations. And indeed, we've had a dramatic shift away from corporations in the U.S. Over recent decades. So that's a lot of what's going on there. So what have states done? They've done two kinds of things to try to deal with the problem I just noted, assuming that it's around tax planning. The first one is you have states like Ohio, Michigan, and Texas that have enacted new tax structures. And what they have done is some version of a gross receipts tax. And then, by the way, Washington has a long history of a gross receipts tax. And then a second thing that states have done is they've tried to deal directly with tax planning. So they've gone to combined reporting, like you. There have been six states that have done that in recent years. And then there's a bunch of other things like disallowing add-backs between related companies and so forth. And so there's a variety of these different efforts. We've just completed a study for the National Conference of State Legislators. It's on their website if you're interested, on combined reporting. And I don't have time to go through that whole study. It's a presentation in itself. But I encourage you to read it and if you're interested in continuing to examine that issue. So there's my comments. Karen, I'd be happy to respond to questions. I'm going to grab my water.
For Professor Fox. Yes, Representative.
Hi, thank you. Joe Parisi again. Do you know if the evidence supports the premise that sales tax is a, quote, regressive tax that is disproportionately affects people with lower incomes?
It depends how you look at that question. I've done sales tax studies for a number of states, and if you just go in and look at how people spend their money, the answer is yes. Low-income people spend relatively more of their income on sales taxable items than higher-income people. But then it's always worth pushing that a little further, right? Ask the question, who are those low-income people? And what you end up finding in the data is that the lowest income group of people are spending like 4 or 5 times more than their income. Now, this is something I've tried my whole life to figure out how to do. How do I spend 5 times more than I make? Well, and as you begin to think about it, what you realize is that many of who are categorized as low-income people probably aren't really low-income. They're my students. They're retirees who have lots of wealth but not much income, and so forth. And so there's some low-income people in there, but there's a lot of other folks in there. And when we balance out the fact, and by the way, many of the high-income people aren't high-income for their whole life. It's 1 year. They sell their business or whatever. And so when we balance that out and look at people's lifetime income rather than what they're making this year, because those students can spend so much because somebody thinks they're going to make a lot of money down the road, right? And so when we balance that out, what we find is it's a lot closer to being a proportional tax than is normally thought. It might be slightly regressive, but not nearly as much as is usually argued. And I'll reiterate that in my view, the policy of, okay, maybe it's a little regressive, so let's start exempting things we think low-income people spend more money on. If you go look at the data, what you find is low-income people spend more money on everything than high-income people. So just exempt it all. Because there's not, okay, you can tax private schools and maybe life insurance. You know, I mean, low-income people in current income spend more than, you know, on everything relative to their income. So the best policy, in my view, is not to start trying to narrow down the sales tax base. The best policy is think about it as a system. And you have an income tax, you have a sales tax. It's the balance you ought to be worried about, not is the sales tax fair. I think you end up with better policy.
Thank you for your information. My question has to do with your suggestion that we have lower administrative and compliance costs.
Yeah.
How do we do that? By simplifying our tax code, by removing a variety of tax exemptions and credits and deductions and incentives and give us some suggestion for how we might do that.
Right. Yeah, and let me be clear. I wasn't suggesting that you reduce the size of your tax department here in Wisconsin. What I was saying was design a tax system that's easy to comply with and therefore easier to administer. And so absolutely, my advice is get a tax system that's very straightforward to comply with. And that means not just the income tax. It also means the sales tax and the corporate income tax. And make sure that each of these are designed in ways that facilitate tax compliance. And you look at, I'll pull out some examples. Texas just enacted this new business tax. And whether you like Texas's tax or not, they did it so that it's different from anything anybody else does. So you can't go and look at a business's federal tax return and know what its state tax return ought to look like, even if you're trying to just add up different pieces. That's really bad policy. And they did a horrible job of estimating what the revenues would be because they had designed something that, you know, you couldn't even look at how other taxes are complied with. A great example of one that actually added compliance costs.